Blog Talk Radio.
This is Dorian Wallace.
This is Raina Starr. Welcome to Desperate House Witches. Okay, so welcome to Desperate House Witches Pandemic Edition, which is what all the editions are going to be until this is over. But anyway, if you're new to Desperate House Witches, welcome. This is not GPG or even an R-rated show. So if bad language, dirty talk, and other things might upset you, this may not be the show for you. However, if you can overlook all that, come on, stay a while. We have a great guest today. But before we bring him on, yeah. Desperate House Witches is brought to you by the one, the only, the incredible, the wicked one herself, the lovely Dorothy Marsden. www.wickedwitchstudios.com. Check it out. If you need any witchy pagan goods, go there. And if you need it shipped internationally, check out theangrycauldron.com. And they have their own line of stuff, as well as doing her international shipping. So, before we bring our guest on, I just got to say, you just told me that you started watching Tiger King. I have already completed this travesty, and I have to say this is time I will never get back. But it was funny, it was tragic, it was weird, it was crazy. I do recommend everyone watch it just because it's so bloody out there. But anyway, we are here today to talk about Witch's Wheel of the Year, the new book by the one, the only Jason Mankey. So let's have him on. What do you say?
Absolutely.
Right on.
Hello.
Hi. Hi.
Jason.
Nice to be here. It would have been really terrible if you had decided at the last minute not to have me on, though. That would have really hurt.
Why
would that have happened, Jason?
What's that?
Why do you think that would have happened?
Well, you were asking, should we bring him on? They were kind of questions involved. I didn't expect it to happen, that you would just hang up on me, but there was that little pause there for a second, and just kind of wondered.
You're like, nah. We were just kidding.
Whenever talk about it, whenever she says, should we bring him on, or I say, should we bring him on, it's usually like, do you have anything else to say before we bring him on? Not, are we going to hang up because we just don't want to fucking talk to him? That never happens.
Should we bring him on? No. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not this time, And we're going to just spend the next hour instead talking about the Tiger King, which I completely understand because, it's the Tiger King.
It
was so good. I watched it all in one sitting, like a thirsty child.
Don't you think it was insane and tragic and funny and weird and you'll never reclaim that time again?
Yes, but it was during quarantine, so what else was I going to do? Talk to my wife?
Yeah.
No, I just decided to sit there and watch the Tiger King instead.
It was one of the stranger things I have seen in my life, and I've seen some strange shit. Just saying.
When you thought that it couldn't get any weirder, it just takes another turn and then gets just a bit stranger, all the way through. I mean, usually these shows can't add that many twists and turns, but you can in this one.
Someone's actual
life.
Reality. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It was real. It was scary.
Yeah.
It was weird.
It is. I am so glad I don't live near them, to be honest with you. I like Keith, well, but not that much.
Right. I'm not gonna do any spoilers because you're still watching it. No. So just continue.
Yeah,
that's all.
I think we're up to the trial at this point. Because I had brought it up because I had seen it trending on Twitter, and I'm like, you know what, we probably should watch this, you know, as a suggestion. And I explained it to my husband, and he's like, that sounds like trash. Who the fuck do you think put it on and is still watching it while I'm on that show?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He is
secretly
into it.
In it. Yeah.
Oh my god. He is secretly loving it. All right.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Jason, you have written this beautiful, beautiful book full of rituals that, I mean, you basically give everybody the roadmap on how to do all kinds of rituals.
Yes.
Which I think is really cool. But I've not seen this before. So what made you decide you wanted to just, like, do that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There, I was at a bookstore in Michigan, and I was finishing up the book before that, Transformative Witchcraft, and mm-hmm. I have people ask me, like, what's the next thing that you're going to write? And I was like, I'm kind of thinking about writing a ritual book. And they got very excited,
yep.
which I took as a good sign. So I thought, well, I'll kind of pursue that. And I wanted to write the kind of book that I wish I'd had 20 years ago when I was sort of starting out. We often have to do rituals. And for most people, I think in the pagan community, we learn to do ritual by basically putting our feet in the fire and doing rituals. And there's not a whole lot of advice or suggestions or books out there that really tell you how to do ritual. And ritual is multifaceted. Like, what I do by myself is not the same that I do with 100 people. And I've never seen a book really talk about that. So that was part of the impetus for writing the book, was to give people that sort of advice and then to give them rituals that they could use that kind of fit their circumstances, whether they're solitary, in a coven or a small group, or have to facilitate a really large ritual. I mean, you both have been to public pagan things. I always appreciate people who try to do large public ritual, but oftentimes it doesn't work because it's so hard to do. And I think we've all been to some of those. So I wanted to hopefully give people, you know, ideas and advice on how to do those. So that was really how the book came together. And I've also just done a lot of really good Sabbat rituals. At least people have told me that they were good. Maybe they were lying to me, I don't know. But I've also just done a lot of rituals over the years, and I wanted to get those in print. I wanted to share them with as many people as I possibly could, and I was really proud of them. So it all kind of worked out very nicely from there.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. It's big. I wish every person I've ever been in a public circle with had it before. Because a lot of the time, even if it's a smaller group, even if it's like 20 people or under, things kind of can get, I don't know, derailed, off track easily when you have a number of people, especially when it's people who don't normally work together in a group. And I mean, your approach to it, I've never attended one of your rituals, unfortunately. I hope to at some point, sooner than later. But it's, you know, you actually talk about giving people something to do. Everybody needs to be involved in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, that's when I was reading, I was kind of laughing because it's like, I remember the time, you know, we were in the middle of ritual and then a bird flew by and it made a weird noise and everybody cracked up and the priestess couldn't find her place. I mean, it was just insane. you know, in my over 50 years in my over 40 years of being involved in ritual, this would have been really instrumental in keeping our shit together. Because, just in general, I find it hard to keep people in a larger group focused.
Oh, it's really hard. And I think when it comes to large public ritual, finding a ritual that gives people something to do in the middle of it without the ritual completely falling apart is probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do within paganism. Easy things you can do. You can dance around a maypole or something, but you can't do that at every Sabbath. So you have to kind of figure out new things to do, and those things should involve people without them being spoken to or talked to. You know, I go to a lot of rituals, and it feels like I'm in the middle of a play. Like, there are these people in the middle of the circle who are doing things, and my job is to watch them do things? I mean, that's not really good ritual. That's going to church. I mean, ritual is participatory. So finding those things for 50 or 100 people to do is very challenging. But there's some, I think, some really great examples in that book, and a lot of how I kind of put that together ended up being through trial and error over the years. And sometimes it was through watching other people's rituals that were really bad. I have learned more about how to do a good ritual by watching rituals that were good. And so, I encourage everybody, if you want to be good at ritual, go to a lot of rituals. And don't make fun of people for it not working. Sometimes there's all kinds of mitigating circumstances. And, you know, I have a lot of respect and appreciation for anyone who tries to do public ritual. But when you get to one of the really bad ones, you know, the bad one that you're going to be talking about for the next 15 years, and all of your friends, you get together and you lament the bad one. That is the most instructive ritual you'll ever go to.
Well, it's not like we're still talking. I mean, maybe we are a little bit, but I mean, all right. I've just been outed. That's fine. Never mind. There have been some really shit ones. I mean, I'm sorry. But I do have to say, I love the idea that people are willing to do it. And I think it takes a lot of bravery to try to herd cats, as Sister has said to me a million times. But, I mean, because it's just, I mean, you know, we're pagans. We got a lot of shit on our minds. And ritual, even in the midst of ritual, that's not necessarily where we're focused. We're hungry. We're tired. We want something to drink. We want to go to the bathroom. Somebody needs to scratch their ass. You know what I'm talking about.
You know, and sometimes I think it's even more than that. It's, you know, we are basically a bootstrap community, spiritual community, culture, whatever you want to call it. And we have to learn by doing. And you can't get better without doing things. So you have to fail. I mean, we don't have, like, the Methodists have, like, you know, a whole conference set up to help people learn how to do things in their tradition. I mean, we have teachers and stuff, but it's not the same. We're not full-time people doing these things. The person running the public ritual in the park is not a full-time high priestess or officiant or whatever. So, I mean, we have extra challenges that I think a lot of other faith communities don't have.
Yeah, because, you know, and that's really, really true. And everybody is trying to do something unique. And I give folks a lot of credit, which is why I've never tried to do public ritual, because I couldn't.
Wise, very wise.
I don't have the talent. I don't have the patience. I recognize these things about myself. I leave it to people who are smarter than me. I pretty much try to leave as much as possible to people who are smarter than me. Because I recognize I ain't so bright. But, I mean, it's a daunting task. And I'm teasing, but I really do appreciate it when someone tries to put together a ritual. This actually is something that could be used for everybody, by anybody, even if it's just a solitary ritual, which is awesome. Because a lot of folks, even solitary, don't know where to start. I mean, you know, as pagans, we always try to say, you know, do whatever's in your heart. Do whatever you feel. What is your goal? Put it out there, you know. But this is really, I mean, it's appropriate to all of the rituals that come through the Wheel of the Year, which is why this is so fantastic. But I still want you to write the book that I suggested.
Cool.
He's going to kill me. I know it. I don't care. I'm begging him to write a book about the times we're living in right now and being a witch in it.
Yeah.
The pandemic witch.
Yeah. From pandemic.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, you could include sections on, like, you know, baking and home economics type of stuff. You know, what basically everybody is, you know, gone to at this point. People are starting to plant gardens. People are learning how to sew. They're learning how to cook and bake. It's actually quite a beautiful thing. Yeah, despite the reasoning behind it.
So I'll tell you some secrets about the publishing industry. You know, let's say it takes you on a good end, it takes you maybe 3 months to write a book, and it takes me usually longer than that. But let's just be hopeful. So if I started that book in April, May, June, it would be done in, let's say, June, and then it would take a year before Llewellyn published it. And by then, no one would want to relive this.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I don't know about
that. Do you want to go back to the glory days of April 2020? We'll say no one ever, probably.
Yeah, but you also have to recognize the fact that this is going to happen again.
Oh, I know. Hopefully with more competent leadership next time. Yeah.
I agree with you. But that's why I think, you know, all of the pandemics that have happened until this one have been leading up to this one. You know, swine flu, bird flu, whatever, I'm missing
Ebola.
One of them that was Ebola. I mean, all of these things have gotten increasingly worse and have killed increasingly more people. I think what this has done, this particular one, is making it so that we actually do have to change a lot of our behaviors. I'm very concerned about when we see folks at the next convention, are we going to be able to touch? Are we going to be able to hug? Are we going to be able to be in a ritual like all of the beautiful rituals in this book? You know what I mean? It's something I'm really concerned about.
You know, I was thinking, I was at two festivals in February this year, one here in California, and this is President's Day weekend, so around Valentine's Day, and the county where it was, where I live, you know, was one of the first to get really hit with infections pretty hard. And then the next week I went to Detroit for another festival, and Detroit has been hit really hard. Luckily, from what I understand, there's like not a sickness going around, the virus that did not infect the pagan community. But I mean, what if it had? What if there had been a carrier there with no symptoms? Because we are a very affectionate community, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have gone. That probably would have just gone through all 1,500 participants. 2,000, you know. At each one. I mean, it just would have whoosh, like gotten all of us. I feel very, very lucky that I'm healthy right now after festivals.
Oh,
February.
Definitely. But see, this is what I'm concerned about. This is why I think, you know, okay, I want it to go back to the way it was, where we could all be affectionate and be together and, you know, have all of the beautiful things we used to. I'm just very fearful that we're not going to be able to. It just, you know, people are so afraid of each other right now. I don't know. It's like, you know, my son comes home and I want to give him a hug. And it's kind of like, everybody wash your hands first. Okay. Everybody scrub up first. Okay. Did you touch your face? No. Okay. Do I need to take your temperature? No. Okay. I mean, it's like this checklist I have to go through when I leave the house, and a checklist I have to go through when somebody comes home. It's just so weird right now. And I don't know how much of it's going to change.
Yeah. I go for walks most evenings. And I mean, I live in a nice kind of residential area with sidewalks and stuff, and there are a lot of other people out walking their dog or whatever it is. But when I see somebody, I mean, I like move like 15 feet away from them.
Yeah.
And I feel like really bad. And sometimes I'm like, you know, nothing personal. I just assume everybody is a zombie. So I'm staying far away. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes they laugh and sometimes they look at me like I'm crazy. Either, you know, response is fine. But yeah, it just kind of changes everything you do and how you operate.
Yeah.
And like going to the grocery store is scary. I mean, going to the grocery store has never been pleasant, but it's never been scary before.
Yeah. It's loading up
on masks
and gloves, you know, before you go anywhere, you know, and that's
if you have to.
Yeah.
Well, that's if you have them. You know, you first have to be able to find masks and gloves, which is very difficult.
Exactly.
I just think it's going to change the nature of ritual, especially in a public forum. And I just, you know, me being clueless to begin with, I don't know what that's going to look like. Because I don't see how we are going to go back that fast to the world as it was. So I do get curious about how pagans are going to interact in ritual and how, you know, and how we're going to make use of all this fantastic information, you know, in a world that has just kind of changed in a couple of weeks. I mean, it's only been 3 weeks since I realized people were hoarding things and that you couldn't get toilet paper like you want to during a normal period of time, and that this is suddenly now a concern. Where you go to the supermarket, I mean, we used to go to the supermarket early anyway. We're going at the normal time when they open because we like to get tasks done and we like to go home and relax. Now it's like fucking Death Race 2000 to get paper towels. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I hope it changes back. At least some. I mean, maybe with people we know. Like when I go to visit my sister's new house, it's going to be like I'll wash my hands. But I mean, should my sister have to hug her, right?
You better.
Well, I think, what it will really do is in the future, like if we're at a public event or something and somebody coughs, I think that will be an indication that person just needs to leave right now. I mean, I just don't like if anyone is ever sick, I think they'd just be escorted off the premises for being sick, which sounds terrible. But, you know, I think that's going to be the reaction.
At least for a little while.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think we also underestimate, you know, the fact that people are a lot like goldfish. That if it's no longer affecting us, you know, after a while we tend to forget and fall back into our routines. I think it's going to take a little bit longer this time.
And I think people who were already not, you know, because we have members of, you know, our community that are, you know, they're not necessarily huggy like some of others of us. And I think it's just going to, I'm concerned about the turnout at pagan events now. It's something I think about just, you know, from a sociological standpoint, you know, how is this going to affect how we behave, you know, in the near future, not just the distant future. And you're right, sis. I think people do tend to forget and get careless. I mean, talk about careless. You can barely get people to remember to stand 6 feet apart. I am persistently screaming every damn day. I am screaming at least 7 or 8 people huddled together. And I'm like, this is not 6 feet. What are you people doing? And they all shoot me a look like, huh? I mean,
what do you mean?
You mentioned pagan festivals. And I worry about them, not just, you know, people are going to go in the future. I worry about a lot of them from a financial standpoint because they're not things that make a lot of money. You know, they're operating on really thin margins. And to lose a year and have invested money in that year already, that's kind of non-recoupable, right? I mean, they're going to lose it. And all these events probably have insurance. but a lot of insurance doesn't cover something like a pandemic. So,
you know, and that's ridiculous.
I really worry about a lot of these. Yeah, it's my wife and I had an overseas trip planned for September, October, and we always buy trip insurance. You know, if somebody gets sick, they'll refund everything that you've spent. One of the things that it does not cover is a pandemic. Now, if I were to get sick and not go, then things are covered. But if things are canceled because of a pandemic, it does not count that. So, I mean, insurance has always kind of been a scam. But, again, it's one of those things where even if you think that you've done everything right, you might get, you know, really caught up in the fine print and, you know, get really hurt by it. So I really worry about festivals going forward. And we've already kind of had the first wave of cancellations. I know most of the ones that were going to happen in May have canceled. I don't expect the June ones to happen, maybe the July ones. I don't know, you know, and I think that festivals are so important for our community, and it's a way to meet people across state lines and sometimes even, you know, borders of nations and stuff. A lot of people go to things. To lose that, it's going to be a really sad thing. So I hope that they survive somehow.
I do too. I mean, I don't see it being a great year for it, obviously. But, I mean, hopefully if they can find a vaccine for it, that might put a lot of people at ease enough that we could get back to our normal lives, quote unquote, a little faster, maybe in the next couple of years. But, I mean, I'm concerned about folks that, like you said, it's not just the organizers. It's the folks that count on going to these things to make income for the year. Sam Fliegel, great artist friend of ours of the show, is now doing videos like every day. Because, you know, we used to ask Sam, you know, you do all this stuff on commission, you know, isn't that kind of nerve-wracking to have all of your income come from commission work and, you know, drawing what you want and being freelance like that? And he said, you know, I've not had to worry in years. And then the pandemic hits, and he's like, and now I have to question everything. So it's amazing how something like this can happen relatively quickly, because I think we saw this coming late last year. But, of course, our current administration didn't want to talk about that or recognize it. But here we are. And it just seems like every day lasts a week, you know, like time is in very slow motion.
I don't even know what day it is anymore because, everything sort of bleeds together. And the things that I used to do during a week that kind of kept me on a schedule, those are all gone.
Yeah.
You know, so the Monday is exactly like the Thursday in a lot of ways. And the weekend is no more exciting than Tuesday night was. You know,
right.
You know, you're just kind of stuck. Yeah. So it's difficult. Yeah.
We got all thrown off. I'm sorry. It's just when we were moving, because we moved on the 17th. You know, it's like half an hour away, and we had withdrawn our youngest son from school that the 13th, and you know, and we were gonna use the rest of the couple days to finish up packing and get moved and everything, and then they did the shutdown, so I had to call his new school, and she's like, "Yeah, we're not doing enrollment. Let me see what I can do." So he's kind of been in limbo because he's already withdrawn from one school, but he wasn't enrolled in the new school. So we got that situated today. So hopefully, you know, there'll be a little sense of normalcy, even though we're all just in the house, you know.
I was just going to say, like, my life is sort of weirdly normal in some ways because my wife works in the medical field and she still has to go into work every day. She doesn't work at a hospital, so she's not on the front lines of that. But she still has to go in. And, you know, so in that sense, I guess, you know, there's still kind of a Monday through Friday routine at our house. But, still, you just, you kind of get lost with everything because you just rely on,
yeah,
you know, certain things that you do during a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
out the window.
Yeah.
But
go ahead.
Another thing that I love about the book is the fact that, you know, because things are really distressing right now, even if you know your standard rituals that you like to do in a solitary manner, it's nice to have something different to look at, something, you know, something else to do. Because I do the same rituals all the time. It's the same devotional every day. And it's so nice to have something else to do. So I am very appreciative. Yeah, I mean, you know, because everything you've written in here for a group can be modified, which is great because a lot of us, you know, have to practice solitary now. We have no choice. So
right.
It's great for that as well. It's very adaptable, which I very much appreciate.
You know, one of the things, if you go back and you read books from the 70s, 80s, and even the 90s in a lot of cases, I think the rituals in those books are usually very bad because I don't think that we knew how to do rituals yet. I mean, it's like in a public sense. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, call quarters and cast a circle and to do some energy raising and stuff. Those are kind of ritual standards, and those were probably good in the 70s and in the 60s and in the 50s. But when it comes to sort of thought out ritual, like, you know, we're going to do something seasonal for Ostara,
yeah,
and it's going to, you know, with a little bit of magic and meaning about where we are on the wheel of the year, you know, if when you read those old rituals, a lot of times they're just basically nothing but kind of call and response, you know,
yeah,
like, we are here,
yeah,
what are we here for? To celebrate Ostara. And they're just like Bucky's Big Blue Book rituals are so terrible. They're so terrible. And even when I went back and read Scott Cunningham's Wicca, A Guide for the Solitary Practitioner, I mean, that's a very good book in so many ways, but I thought that the rituals in it were not good at all. I mean, they were like,
no,
you know, a page. You know, my rituals are like 3,000 words, you know, like, here's all this shit right here. You know, and these rituals are like, your in-bulk ritual is 2 pages long, 300 words, you know, and I'm like, wow. I mean, there's just not much to them. So that's one of the things about the book that I hope, even for solitary practitioners, is that, you know, there's a bigger ritual with a little more meat on the bone or, you know, tofu on the plate if you're a vegetarian.
There you go.
I like it.
I am not a vegetarian, but thank you. Oh, my gosh. I've been a vegetarian a couple of times. Yeah, you're in and out of it, sis. Sis is better at it,
yeah,
than I am. But I'm, nah, I did it. I'm not into tofu, but I appreciate the reference anyway, because I was a vegetarian at one time. But, yeah, I mean, you're talking about Cunningham's rituals. Listen, in my opinion, when, you know, when Wicca was first brought over here, yeah, it was very much like church, and it was very much call and response, and I think everybody was still trying to figure out, you know, the power structure, because, as you know, there have been, in the 70s especially, there was always a struggle between, you know, who was going to be more powerful as far as the priest, the high priestess and the high priest, and, you know, I've witnessed a lot of these things go down, as it were, for lack of better terminology. But now, you know, trying to be more inclusive, I think it's very important that we do give folks a sense of, you know, you're part of this ritual. You know, you need to be active in it, not just, I mean, because the rituals in the 80s were very much church-like, and you know, you mentioned that earlier, and it's very, very true. And I think as we, you know, become more self-realized and recognize that, you know, there are different specters of people out there, that it's important to make everyone feel like this is something they can do, this is something that they can make a part of them. So I love that.
I do think that there are people especially who go to public rituals now, who basically kind of operate on their own, and then they want a little bit of fellowship now and again, so they go to the big public ritual, but they don't want to do anything. I mean, I've noticed it in some of our groups in Silicon Valley. They just want to go. They want somebody else to do all the heavy lifting, and they just sort of want to be around people. So that's another thing to kind of navigate, because you don't want to do a ritual that puts people on the spot by making them do things. Like, I know people who love rituals, you know, it's like, we're going to have competitive boasting in this ritual. And, you know, there are people who just aren't going to be comfortable with that. I mean, I wouldn't be comfortable with that. And it also, your ritual then lives and dies over whether or not these people participate in a way that you want them to. And that's really difficult to navigate. I always try to do rituals where you give people things to do, but what they make out of those things is really sort of a personal choice. And I always really never want to put anybody on the spot, because, you know, there are those people who just have no desire to speak in public or to be the center of attention. And I think that's fine.
Of course, absolutely. But I also think, you know, there's a lot to be said about, hey, we're going to do this. Do you want an active role in it? Because you're right. You don't want to put people on the spot. And I find a little pre-planning is very helpful when possible. I mean, if you get folks used to the idea of, listen, you know, the best way to make this successful is to have everyone buy in whatever capacity you're able to do that, you know, fantastic, but here are the things we're interested in accomplishing at the next ritual. You know, I've never had that happen. And I think it would be a glorious thing if people had a heads up sometimes and they could decide, that maybe this ritual isn't for me. Or, hey, I've been waiting for a ritual like this. I think that could kind of cover the whole sphere of folks who might attend. Because, listen, everything is not for everybody. You know, you like to have scotch. I don't. It's not for me. It's for you. That's fine. I don't feel less than just because it's not for me. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, there's a fine balancing act there, too, because I will admit that sometimes I like to be surprised during rituals.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to know everything that's going to happen. You know, if there's kind of an element that might go, oh, that's really cool, that's nice to have. But at the same time, you don't want to plan a ritual that has something completely out of left field in it, you know, where people are like, what?
Yeah.
Why are they doing that? You know, there's a group here who did a Samhain ritual a few years ago, and I didn't go, but I was listening to people who were on the planning commission and stuff. And it was a really beautiful ritual in a lot of ways, because it was during the really bad forest fires here in our area.
Oh.
And we all knew people who were affected by those. However, for a lot of people, though, that's not a Samhain ritual. You know, they wanted to call their dead and to have that moment. So to present something like this, which really wasn't a Samhain ritual, really kind of had people scratching their heads. You know, and I'd hear about it. Like, yeah, but, but it was a nice ritual, but it really wasn't about Samhain. So, you know, so you kind of have to balance, you know, having maybe a surprise, but also meeting people's expectations and hitting kind of the things that they expect to be hit at various Sabbaths. I mean, I think at Samhain, they're kind of greatest hits. At Beltane, they're sort of greatest hits. And you want to incorporate those. The ritual is like an act that is done the same over and over. And I think it's good to mix up those acts, but at the same time, there are just little foundational pieces in the Sabbaths that a lot of people always want to kind of revisit and go back to.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, there are some themes that are just expected. And I will tell you that it has been a very rare case that I have ever been surprised in a ritual, although I could definitely stand a few surprises at this particular point in my life. Maybe something a little more pleasant than the one we've just gotten would be helpful, but you know, it's yes, of course, there's going to be basic themes, you know, life and death, you know, the welcoming of spring, you know, the earth returning, or Persephone returning to the underworld, the whole nine yards. You know, it, yes, there are certain basic themes, but yeah, I mean, you got to shake it up a little bit. I mean,
yeah.
I will be honest with you. I've attended some really great rituals and some that I was kind of like, afterwards. And I really have no business saying anything because I've never conducted one. I just know it's difficult. But I've been to the same ritual repeatedly, and I guess a lot of it's about the energy of the folks around you that affects whether or not you feel good afterwards. Because we've done the same ritual many, many years, and most of the time, beautiful, love it every time. I know what to expect. I'm very comfortable. I know what's happening. But there have been a couple of years where there's been folks that I didn't know. And it makes it difficult, you know, because if you're not working consistently with the same group, sometimes your energy can get thrown off, you know. So I find it hard for me.
Yeah, the energy of people makes a big difference in ritual.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can tell, like, there's that one person in the back who really, really hates this ritual or doesn't believe in what you're doing. Like, let's say you're doing a ritual and it has deity in it, and they're, like, extremely atheist, and they kind of scoff the whole way through. I mean, you can feel that.
Uh-huh.
You know that it's happening. It brings everything down to a degree.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even if it's the best ritual that you've ever written, or maybe the best ritual ever written in the world, if the people who are there aren't really participating or aren't reacting to it in some ways, it's probably not going to be as good as it should be.
I agree.
Yeah.
Our
well,
audiences
are.
Yeah. Participants are important.
I'm like, empaths. This is why, I mean, I'll participate public rituals, but generally I don't throw myself into it because the whole time I can hear, am I doing this right? Am I standing in the right place? What comes next? It's very distracting to me, you know?
No,
I
think that's a big problem in public ritual. People do worry about those things, or the instructions aren't very clear about what you're supposed to do. And one of my favorite examples is sometimes, you know, like they'll be like, okay, now we're going to do this chant. And this chant is like 12 lines long, and we've all just learned it. And all I can think of, like, is I'm going to screw up the lines of this chant.
Uh-huh.
You know, like whatever the meaning of the chant is has been lost. All I'm concerned about is not saying it wrong. And so your priorities then shift, and it's not about the ritual. It's just about not feeling silly. So sometimes I think we overthink things, you know, keep it simple, you know.
Yeah.
Things that are two lines long for a chant are the best because it's hard to forget. And when I do public ritual, one of the things that we always do, especially like if the ritual has a couple of moving parts, we repeat everything two or three times. You know, like, this is what we're going to do. There's another little bridge. And then we repeat it again. This is what we are going to do. And the big Samhain ritual that's in the book, and it's like probably my favorite ritual I've ever written. You know, we call down the goddess. Like, we draw down the goddess in the ritual. And then she picks somebody to open the portal to the Summerlands, which in the way I wrote it, it's the high priest because it's my wife and I working together. So I've kind of drawn down the god. And then everyone has to walk to a different room where there are these walls that we've kind of built in the middle of the space where a picture of your dead are at. And you have to find that person and leave them an offering and things. But at the same time, you can also approach the goddess and ask a question of her. And then there's also a candlelight that you can take with you to remember the experience. So there's all these kind of different things going around. And, you know, so we always make sure to explain that two or three times so that nobody gets lost or is overwhelmed by it. And then also one of the things I really like about that ritual is we're not telling you how to experience this. We're just setting up this container for you to have the experience. So, you know, here's the portal to the Summerlands, and we believe that your beloved dead are in this place. How you interpret that, how you feel that is up to you. We've just created this place for you, and you can do with it as you will. So that's kind of like my favorite style of big public ritual. And again, lots of repeating of directions.
Oh, yeah.
No,
and
I
simple
love that.
Is better. Yeah, I did too. Simple is so much better. I went to a ritual, it's about 15, 16 years ago now, and we're standing there, and the person leading the ritual says, okay, we're going to do this chant, no previous warning. We went through the chant. It was long, Jason. It was long. And it was supposed to go, it was supposed to be done in the round, and now you're telling people who don't know this long chant that they have to focus when people are doing another part of the chant at the same time.
That's awful.
It was terrible. It was well-intentioned, of course, but it was such a mess that our priestess got really annoyed and was like, you know, forget it. And we were like, oh, and we felt badly about it. And I know that that was not her intention, but, you know, we want to do what we're instructed to do. You know, we didn't come in with the idea of, well, we're just not going to do what she says. We act very much wanted to, you know, make her happy because she had done a lot of work on this. And, oh, God, it was painful. I mean, really, it was just painful. It was. I'm sorry for her because she really tried to get, and let's face it, it was a big ritual. It was 35 people that didn't know each other. A lot of the folks had just met for the very first time. You know what I'm talking about, sis. I'm just saying, and you know who it was too. But anyway, please keep rituals. If you are doing rituals and you are conducting circles, please, please keep it simple for folks. They want to do the right thing. They're trying to make you happy. Please don't make it harder than it has to be. That's why this book is really fantastic, and I highly recommend it because it is such a great guide for doing ritual, not just for large groups, but for yourself as well, which is really important to remember right now. This is, you know, because there will be a time, hopefully not too far in the future, where we can all do big rituals together again and be comfortable. I'm sure we can find ways to do it in spite of the way things are, only it's just going to be a lot bigger with a lot fewer people. I think there are ways to make this all happen. We've just not been given the opportunity to see what that actually looks like yet. So I'm curious to see how that's going to work out. But I'm hoping, I'm very hopeful. But this book is beautiful, Jason. It really is. I've got like six of your other things, but this one is, I got to say, I like it a lot. It's really great.
You know, though, if I'd been writing that book now, it would probably have a fourth category of ritual, like the online ritual.
That's great.
That's awesome.
But that's really important. It is. It's important. And, you know, the connectivity is important, especially now when people are stuck in their homes, whether they want to be or not. Like, see, I'm a homebody. I like being home. I love my house.
Me too.
I don't get to be home. Yeah, I don't actually get to be home because I'm considered a necessary, essential, whatever the hell. I don't know what they call it now, whatever. But I'm allowed to work is the point. Don't know for how long, but whatever. So, you know, for folks that are going stir crazy, like all of my neighbors, this is something, if they were pagan, that would be really fantastic for them, you know, to do online ritual, because I can see people are starting to get a little bit nutty, not having additional adults traction. I'm seeing the strain.
I did.
You know,
I did a Stara on. Yeah, I did a Stara on Blog Talk Radio, because I knew that I wasn't going to get to do one really with like my covens like I'd planned, and there just felt like there was a need to do it, so I set one up, and it was just kind of fun. Everybody that asked to help, they were like really excited about helping out, and we had a lot of nice comments afterwards, and a lot of people listening in and hopefully participating, because you're just so desperate for that connection in some way.
You had done a Facebook Live earlier this week that I thought was really fantastic, and it was.
Yes.
I enjoyed it. It was good to see you. It was good to hear you and see you and feel like, you know, okay, so we're not in the same room, but at least I get to see you. It feels better when we still need human connection, no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a practice. That was practice because I'm thinking about doing it on the Pathios Pagan Facebook page, which, you know, has like a lot of people who have signed up for it as a way to say hi.
Yep.
So I thought if I could get through it on my private page for 40 minutes, I could do it in front of 50,000 people. So we'll see.
You did a great job. It was early. It was really a relief to see you. I'm sure a lot of people felt the exact same way. It's like, oh, wow, this whole thing doesn't have to be shit. This is really cool. And, you know, a lot of our friends are like, hey, you know, let's do a video chat. Yeah, that's a great idea. So, you know, a lot of our friends have started doing that, and it's really nice. And I think there's still space, even after this thing ends, I think there's still going to be a lot of space for pagans to do ritual online. I think for a lot of folks, they're going to be more comfortable that way. So I think it's an important thing that we just kind of need to explore, don't you think?
I do. I think it's really difficult, though. I remember when I was trying to write one because I'd never done one before. I was like, how do you have that moment where everyone can participate in some way, you know? And so that was sort of the big challenge, I think, of it.
Yeah. But you're good, and you know how to write that stuff. So I'm sure.
I hope I didn't completely face splat. That's the hope.
Not likely. You're not a splatter. You're fine.
No.
Yeah, I'm not going any further than that. And during that little question, splatter and stuff, it just seems like problems.
Sorry. But anyway, you did a great job. And we've got about 8 minutes left. So whatever you want to talk about that we didn't address, let's talk about it now.
Well, you did a really great job hyping the latest book, which is really nice. You know, so that was very sweet. And I'm really proud of that book. I'm really happy with that book. I actually thought it might be terrible because I wrote it really fast. Llewellyn asked for a quick turnaround time on it. That it was kind of an extra challenge. So you're writing about Yule in May, and it's really hard to write Yule rituals. And no, it was June. It's really hard to write Yule rituals in June. But somehow, you know, I kind of pretended that it was Christmas and figured it out, I guess. So it kind of had extra challenges. But the next book is all about Yule. So I'm kind of excited.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
Well, it's weird when you write books because, you know, I put the Witch's Wheel of the Year like to bed in September of 2018, and then it came out in December of 2019. So like, you know, you're done with it and you're like on to the next project, and you can't talk to about the next project yet because it's not going to be out for 2 years or something.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
So
that must
it's
be
always really strange.
Yeah, that must be frustrating as a writer because, like you said, you've already written it, you're already done with it, you're on to the next thing, and it's like, oh, I already did this already. Can we talk about? We can't talk about the new thing. No, huh? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That must be very frustrating. I don't know how I would deal with that.
You know, people ask you questions about the book, and it's like so long ago that you don't remember the book, so you have to go back and, you know, look up your own writing to answer their questions
yeah.
about whatever it is.
Wow. Mm. I didn't think about nope. that. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have you on as soon as you're done with the next one.
Yeah. Well, the next one comes out in September, and that's the Yule book. And right now I'm writing a whole God book, which is due in a couple of weeks. So,
oh,
you know, so I always have like a new book out and then one that is done sitting at Llewellyn, and then I'm working on something else. So my brain gets all kinds of mixed up while I'm in the middle of all these projects.
I can imagine.
Well,
busy, busy, busy.
Yeah, but that's good. I mean,
yeah.
Most of the writers I know at some point suffer some kind of horrible writer's block, and
yeah.
I don't know if you've ever even experienced that, but I
mean, yeah. Oh, yes. So the Horned God book I'm writing right now was due in December. So we're 4 months past the due date. And a lot of that was just because I was just kind of, you know, writer's block. It's just I'd written so many books in a short period of time. And the Wheel of the Year book and the book before that, Transformative Witchcraft, are both really long books. They're like 120,000
yeah.
words. The average of the Llewellyn book is probably closer to 60,000 words. So it's almost like writing two books at
oh
the same
gosh.
Time. Yeah.
Wow.
Sometimes your brain is just kind of dead. It doesn't want to, it just doesn't want to
yeah.
do those things.
Like,
and
I
writing
don't
now,
wanna...
man, and writing now is challenging. I think everything's challenging, you know, just getting through the day is challenging. Even if
yeah.
you have a normal routine, you just know that things aren't like they're supposed to be. So that affects
yeah.
you in various ways.
Yeah. I haven't been out of the house
Sorry.
In like 3-4 days. I went out in the backyard last night. I was like, oh, outside.
I go on walks.
Yeah. Nice.
I haven't been into any place in a long time. We pick
yeah.
up food every once in a while because we want to keep our local places open. But that's it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, I miss sitting at the pub. I really
yeah.
miss watching basketball and hockey right now, like, so much.
Oh, gosh.
yes, I miss hockey.
Oh, my God. Yes, you're a sports guy. Holy shit, you must be out of your mind right now. Yeah, I know a lot of people who are. Oh, it's rough. It's rough.
It is.
Yeah, these replays ain't cutting it.
Tonight's WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So that's something to watch.
Yes.
But I mean, it's usually WrestleMania is like in a football stadium with 70,000 fans, and this
yeah.
was taped in an empty gymnasium, so it's going to be really
oh,
weird
shit.
To watch, you know, but the realities of the virus and how it changes everything up. But
yeah.
I am
you know
excited
what,
to watch.
What I've gotten really sports. Into... Check into drone racing. That stuff is fun to watch. Even if you watch, like, replay, you know, like, if, you,
yeah.
if you're starting from the beginning, you know, it's awesome. I love it. It's fun
okay.
to watch.
That's something I have not heard of, but we will totally check into it. Jason, you're wonderful. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
The book is Witch's Wheel of the Year, Rituals for Circles, Solitaries, and Covens. Jason Mankey was our guest today. Please get this book, as everything else he writes. This is fantastic, and I highly recommend it, and everyone needs a copy, especially right
Absolutely.
Now. Please check it out. The rituals are really clear. They're beautifully written. You'll know what you're doing. Please, if you want to do a public ritual in the future, practice now. Get this book, please. Thank you.
Yes.
For the rest of us, attend your rituals. We thank you. Jason, we're going to have you back on in September to talk about your next book.
Sweet. You know, but then and I'll be writing like the next book after the Horned God book, so I won't know what planet I'm on, but it'll be really fucking nonetheless.
Dude, I'm trying. We'll stick with me.
Yeah. We'll remind you. Don't worry about it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you both
thank
for having
you
me.
Thank you so
today.
Much
this has
for
been
coming
a blast. It's so nice to connect with people.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's always fun
see
talking
so nice
with you,
Brian, later. Talk to you later, Jason.
All right. I'll talk to you all soon. Thanks.
You have a wonderful weekend.
All right, sis. We're
all right.
Out. Let's go.
All right. We love you guys. We hope you have a safe and safely interesting weekend. May it be enough to keep you occupied and keep you engaged without getting too bored. But we love you guys, and we'll see you all next Friday. Bye.
Have a good one. Bye.